I would now like to invite, welcome Mr. Al Kapoor, co-chair, Tycon East, to introduce Mr. Howard Stevenson, Mr. Frank Douglas, and Mr. Hatim Thiabji, our opening keynote speakers for the conference this morning.
Thank you, Apoor, for the fabulous speech. So let me ask you to think for a second why you're here today. Well, I think we all share the dream, the courage to dream, and also weave them into reality. To help you with this, we have three extraordinary speakers this morning, and honestly, there are not enough hours in the day to list their credentials. In the 1980s, as head of entrepreneurial faculty at HBS, Howard Stevenson defined entrepreneurship, which is quite an unruly field, as we all know by experience. He identified a key attribute of new endeavors, restricted resources. That's something we all face. And now in recent years, he has unknotted uncertainty. We all deal with it at the frontier every day. And the urgency to make our own luck. Asking the right questions, seeking answers, is more paramount than ever due to a flattening, fast-changing, and interconnected world we live in. Howard is the vice provost at Harvard and was the founder of Bopus Group with over $400 million in assets. He will be speaking to us this morning.
Thank you very much, Al. This is a great pleasure to be here, looking out into an audience I can't see. I have been interested in the question of prediction for a long time because in academia, many people think they can. The evidence is underwhelming. So as we look, can we put up the slides? What we'll try and do is work through some puzzles, think a little bit about some principles, and then I'll try and give you some afterthoughts and do this in the 20 minutes I've been allotted. So I'll speak fast and probably skip quickly. You know, if you meet this demented genie, there's a guy who comes up to you on a beach. He offers you a wish. You have to focus it on your career. And you ask that your scientific work be very successful and it be widely recognized. And the genie's kind. He says, done. And then he says, you win the Lasker Prize. Your science becomes a basis for a new company. You get major recognition and you net $10 million after tax when the company is sold. But unfortunately, this guy is really demented. And as he grants you your wish, he also announces that your scientific rival wins the Nobel Prize and $50 million. Now, the question is, are you happy? I think as you think about this one a little bit, it's not too much of a problem. Here's a real historic example. Since you're in Boston, and I teach at Harvard, and life here is one century after another, I'll give you the situation. There's a critical battle about to begin. The enemy is about to invade your territory. Your world superpower is about to side with your enemy. You've been given the enemy battle plans. They've been authenticated, and you know they're current. The plans show your troops are in a superior position. Attacking now means foregoing the usual battle preparations, and it'll take at least a day for you to get your superior's approval. So what do you do? This is a bet that was faced by General McClellan at the Battle of Antietam. We'll come back to that in a minute. I'll give you another little test. How often do you bet? Now, I know people who don't think they do at all, but, you know, do you do it once, many times a day? Once or twice a day? You know, once a week? Several times per month? Several times per quarter? Or are you like some entrepreneurs I know who say, and virtually never, I actually know everything that's going to happen to me. And I can convince you of that or try to convince the venture capitalists. But my policy is not to gamble. Well, I think the truth is, even in our personal lives, you know, 50% of the marriages end in divorce. Why is that? Well, one is, there's a logical analysis to this. We actually hope that action will lead to the results. That's what we're taught in business schools. I teach that all the time. The only problem is we have to decide what our intent is, and with our intent, we have to choose our action, And then we're never quite sure whether the results will lead us satisfied. I have a friend who complains that, you know, Bill Gates is 1,000 times as rich as he was. You know, he only has $60 million. I mean, the poor guy. But in fact, that's a problem because even having $60 million doesn't give him satisfaction. But one of the things is every one of these steps is connected by a series of predictions. And that we need to know what the ultimate end is. Will we be satisfied at the end? This is probably why the 50% of weddings ends, because humans, all human actions are based on intent, and we hope to achieve the results that will satisfy, but we act without any guarantees. We get up in the morning, we drive in on the Boston Highway, and there's no guarantee we're going to make it. I had a lady following me very closely this morning. We base our actions and decide on intents and actions based on predictions about cause and effect. Each of us develop our own model of cause and effect. And in fact, we try and convince our kids that we got the right model, and generally when they turn 16, they're pretty sure we couldn't have it at all. But one of the things that's quite obvious is that not all human beings are equally good at prediction. And those that predict better, those that understand what can interfere with their plans, actually add value to their future. I think our conclusion is that all actions are bets, unless we know the future, and none of us do. That all things being equal, those people who bet better, in other words, when you get a good hand, you lay out more than when you don't, and if they take action, they actually get more than what they want. And when you get more, other people follow you. That, in fact, one of the things that you as a leader have to do is put your vision of the future out there, and if it happens to work, a whole bunch of people line up to follow you. If it doesn't work, they go to work for your competitor. Predictive intelligence is really acting in the face of uncertainty to bring about the results you want. Now, is this simply something that was God-given to you? I would argue, in fact, that it's actually a process that we can talk about. But betting better requires predictive intelligence, and predictive intelligence uses a set of skills that can be trained and developed and increased for everyone. It's like entrepreneurship. I started studying entrepreneurship back in the 60s. I wrote cases, and my colleagues at Harvard Business School told me I'd set business education back by 20 years. You know, we're supposed to get rid of those people, not support them, is basically what one of them said. But, and then when I got tenure, the dean told me to do something important, so I left. Because I do actually think that the skills you can develop, whether it's in entrepreneurship or prediction, are actually developable skills as long as you break it down into some steps. And if there are stages, you can up your odds at each stage, and that's what we want to talk about a little bit. Each of the stages, intent to action, action to result, and results to satisfaction, can be analyzed. Now, when you think about organizing for prediction, we sort of broke it down to, you know, you have to have cute words because all of the publishers want you to have cute words, but then they don't sell the books anyway, so who cares? What do I want? The orientation steps. What do I really want out of this? And that's a hard step. I mean, it's probably the reason half the marriages end in divorce, but it's also the reason very often we see CEOs fail, is they want power, not success in business. We can go through all those disconnects that are there. The second is organize. Who has to cooperate? More businesses are killed by eye strain than any other disease. I can do it. I'm in charge. I know everything. But in fact, when you actually analyze the process of entrepreneurship, most of us who've been reasonably successful, I realized when the business hit $400 million that I wanted to be an academic. So my young partners carried it on to $6.5 billion in size, and I really like it because I still own a share of it. It pays for being a teacher. But then the prediction. How do you predict? What do I know about the future, and what bets must I place? Because the kind of thing that APIRV did for us is very interesting. You look at what's coming out of Washington, it doesn't deal with inflation at all. In fact, it masks a lot of inflation. We take out of the calculation anything that goes up and use hedonic pricing to make sure that the prices that even are going up are said to go down in the new inflation statistics. Really quite weird. But then the whole question of what am I really going to do is right on the top of it. So in the orientation steps, where am I now? Honest assessment. How many entrepreneurs you know sort of believe, well, we'll come back to that step, but how many people don't really know where they are? They haven't looked at the world around them, seeing all the other people competing. If you look, it was easy. I mean, General Motors could go to the Bloomfield Country Club and figure out what Ford was doing. Now you can't. Everywhere in the world, there are competitors trying to eat your lunch that you don't even know how to speak their language, much less know what they're doing. The big goals. What are the big goals? Because we'll come back to that one. What's the upside of this game? How many people really want to start a restaurant? Have you ever done the calculation of a restaurant? If it works, you get to stay up all night, get up early to go buy the food, and there's a limited number of tables. Even if you had it full every night, you make a decent living, but just barely. I'm sorry, some of you may have started restaurants. It's the largest single failure rate in business. And the question is, when do you decide that you made a stupid decision? I think some of my best decisions were just when I hung the stock certificates up on the wall as saying this is only good for wallpaper. Because deciding when to stop is as important as deciding when to go. You're stranded on a desert island. You can have one person or one book with you. What person or book do you want? Well, many people dream of a very attractive movie star of the opposite gender. Others think about the Bible so they can pray. You ask Dean Kamen, who's a great inventor, ask him who he wants. He says the best damn boat builder in the world. Isn't your real goal not to have fun on the island, but to get off the island? And very often, unless we frame the question properly, we don't go anywhere. Now, if you think of McClellan's list of battle goals, he's a general. That means that there are guys above him and you're supposed to salute him, so he wants to keep them happy. You don't want to screw up, because even generals die occasionally in battle. You want to win this battle. You want to end the war. You want to beat Lee. You want to be a hero. You want to be seen as a hero. You want to be better than Lee because you were in West Point with him, and that's clearly carries over. None of you were in the same school with some of the people here and want to. We only see that a little bit at Harvard Business School. The competition carries on. And then, obviously, at the end of the day, you'd like to get a hot bath and get out of your battle underwear because it was not made by modern technology. He also had a goal of running for president and winning. Now, the trouble is, if you think about those, they're quite contradictory. Therefore, you have to think about some of these other steps, like who do I need in order to achieve my objectives? In McClellan's case, is the War Department guys really important to the battle coming up? Probably not. They'll screw you up. The implicit strategy. How many times do we see business plans where they could work if the world were different, but the world isn't different, or if everybody agreed to cooperate? It'd be great. I thought we saw this all the time in the internet age, where if everybody were part of the network, it would be a great network. The only problem is there's no incentive for the first 50 people to sign up, and therefore nobody gets off the ground. I think one of the most important things people forget is Plan B. Having a Plan B, saying there is an alternative, often is one of the most important things you can have, because if you have a Plan B, then you can think Plan A isn't working. If you have no Plan B, you just keep working on Plan A until you run out of money. And therefore, imagining the alternatives you have is tremendously important. The prediction steps, I think people spend way too much time predicting. Most of what is really important, you know. Now, this sounds funny coming from an academic, but I'll try and prove it to you in a second. What we really look at, say, you know, the wallpaper, you never notice. I mean, what color is the wallpaper in here? Is there wallpaper? Who knows? Who cares? But in fact, very often the most important things are the things that are like wallpaper. It surrounds us, but we never see it. And the other thing is we can often give some of our risks to other people who like the risk that we're ready to get rid of. Action steps, what are we going to do? Is what I'm betting on clear enough? I've heard so many business plans where the word "it" is used, and you keep asking, what does it mean? What are you really talking about? And you can't get a good answer. Obviously, one of the things that happens to us many times in life is when we make the first bet, there are other bets that follow naturally and we haven't looked at it. It's like getting married. And then the question is, when's the game over? When have you got to change? So let's think about it. The betting problem for strategists, which all of you are, is we want to know everything about everything. It would be nice. If we had tomorrow's Wall Street Journal, we would all be rich, except we wouldn't because the markets would be even more efficient. But we really look at the areas where we're most uncertain. A lot of us spend our energy looking at the places where we're greatly uncertain because we're sure if we just knew the answer to that, it would help us. But most of the external changes that have the biggest impact on our lives aren't necessarily, they don't care what we want to know. It's like going sailing. The ocean doesn't care, and neither does the future. So we have to get comfortable with the idea that we can move without knowing everything. One of the fundamental things we saw as we studied this is what you see depends on where you look. Now, this is obvious. This is why you get written up in academic journals. You say the obvious and make it ununderstandable, and they put you in the papers. But when you think about a prediction map, there's some things of high impact and some things of high uncertainty. That's the wild card zone. Now, I would argue that the other three areas, there's a wallpaper zone, things of high impact but low uncertainty. There's the high uncertainty but low impact. And then there's who cares? That's the ant colony. But if you think about Paul Revere, since we're here in Boston for some of you for the first time, this is our great patriot that made a Perv's country lose us. But as we think about it, you want independence. You know the Brits want to beat back the movement and are about to attack. You think they're going to hit Lexington first, then go to Concord. It's where the militias have stored their weapons. And it's soon, but you don't know when. You don't know if the attack will be by land or sea, although it's hard to sail to Concord, but it was great in the poem. And you don't know how many troops the Brits will bring, but you're pretty sure there are more than you can get. You do know they'll fight in red uniforms, they always do, and you know they'll organize in lines, and you know their officers will be nobles without much experience. So your task is to allocate scarce resources. Now, when you start thinking about that for your sets of bets, you know, we shall all hang together, we shall hang separately was one of the mottos. But in fact, if you think about it, in the ant colony zone, you know they'll fight as trained, you know they'll wear red uniforms, and you know the officers are noble. Not much information there, although red uniforms are actually good targets, if you think about it, if you're firing from the woods. You know, the strategic rat hole is how many troops come. You just know they outnumber you. You know that you'd better have enough shots to fire at them, but they got more than you do. You don't know where, you don't know when, you don't land or see, but the most important thing may be that the attack is imminent and you know the targets. So when you look back at McClellan, in his wallpaper zone, he knows that he has Lee's forces cornered. He's outnumbered in 2-1. If Lee wins, the UK will enter on the side of the Confederacy, and Lee's ready to invade Washington, and Lee will move his troops soon. Those are obvious. Now, the trouble is, if you start trying to answer the wild card zone, you don't take action. And in fact, that's what McClellan didn't do. He didn't take action. He waited for approval from the War Department. By that time, the troops had moved, and by that time, the opportunity was lost, and the war went on for 3 more years, and he lost 15,000 troops in this battle. If you think about Bill Gates' problem, now he's got a different one, in the wild card zone, how many hardware guys? You don't know who's going to win. Will IBM win or just be a player? There are all sorts of things that no matter how much you pay Howard Anderson or the Yankee Group or my daughter's company, you know, you can't get the answers to those things. But in the wallpaper zone, you know there are too many hardware guys. IBM's going to be a player. and CPM is not yet the winner, and Apple will stay closed. And it happened for Bill Gates. He was lucky that his mom knew Opal. And Opal thought this wasn't a very important thing, so he said, let Billy have it. I know his mother. If you go to a street game, every big city has it. There's a street game, some guy tossing a coin. He's just tossed 10 straight heads. He invites you to bet on the next toss of the coin at even odds. You can choose any amount of money to lay out. He throws the coin in the air. The question is, what do you bet? Well, if you think about that, it's not too hard. There are two things. Will he change the coin? And is the coin weighted? Now, the only trouble is, you don't know. But it's pretty sure that the answer is what? Walk away. He controls the game. There is no sense in thinking this is a fair game. He can control whether he's using sleight of hand. He can control whether it's a weighted coin. And you have no chance. So why play the game? This is one of the first rules of good prediction. We saw this in another business situation. This is an actual one. You're working with a very important Middle East family. They want you to go into the shopping malls. You've gotten into this situation. You've just inked a preliminary deal. When you start thinking the uncertainty grid, you have maybe a different kind of analysis. If oil prices tumble, if oil prices stay high, you'll fall out of love with your partner, or you'll stay in love. You know, when you've put the various things, that's dreamland. If you stay in love, you'll struggle together. If they hate you and oil prices stay high, they'll probably try and sabotage you, and of course that's the nightmare. As soon as you do this kind of analysis, what do you start to do about your bets? You start to ask, how do I get out of this? Not when do I get out of it, but what are the conditions under which, if we fall out of love, we're going to split? And that led to a different division than saying we own 50-50. It said one controlled the products and the other controlled the real estate, so that you were able to split the things very evenly when you got mad at each other. So the demanded genie returns. The choice one is the old deal, or choice two is $5 million for you, but no asker prize and nothing for your rival. You know, which do you choose? Well, the laugh I got at the first one says some of you would choose the second one. But the real question is why? You know, wouldn't you rather have the first one unless your whole ego is dependent on the second guy? So let me finish. I think what we're trying to say, and I've tried to wrap up a whole bunch of things in very few minutes, anchor yourself to the future you seek, but be honest with yourself about the future you seek. Capitalize on the inevitable. Charles de Gaulle said the rules of strategy are simple. Seize the initiative, capitalize upon the inevitable, always stay in with the outs and never stand between a dog and a lamppost. Keep your big goal in view. If your goal is getting off the island, don't think about what book should I read, and share the risk where you can. Venture capitalists want to share risk with you. They don't seem that way, but in fact, every new investment is a reduction of their risk through diversification. So they're just trying to find a good pool to invest in. And know when you've got to change the game. Games do end, particularly under the uncertainty that Apurv talks about. The bigger you change the one you want to make, the more you have to declutter, prioritize, and change your objectives. If you really want to change your life, you got to decide what you wish to do it. You know, when I got divorced, Arthur Rock, the great venture capitalist, sent me a handwritten note. He said, "Dear Howard, in 1983, the Intel decided the DRAM business was a bad business. They exited, redeployed the assets into an area of better prospect. You've done the same thing in your personal life. Sincerely, Arthur." Which my second wife really liked. But in fact, when you think about the whole issue of making sure you know what you want, and you got to declutter, and then be ruthlessly realistic about your ability to break the connection between your actions and consequences. So last, I think you really say dream forward. It's not about the past. And I have dealt with so many people that try and change the past. But the only thing you can change is the future. You can learn from the past. And I don't make the same mistakes twice very often. And as they say where I come from, there ain't much learning in the second kick of a mule. So the biggest thing is to develop your predictive intelligence. So thank you very much.